Hearing Aaron spell out R-E-L-A-X again reminds me of a snippet that I heard from him after they got crushed by the Vikings on Sunday. He actually joked that at least they had four more points than they did in last year's season opener. I swear, I don't think we used that last night on the show, but he did. He made a joke about how at least we had four more points than last year's season opener when they only scored 3 points against the Saints in Jacksonville. I mean, is it too soon? Might be too soon, Aaron Rodgers. Too soon for all those Packers fans that felt like you sold them a bill of goods about how there would be no other contenders in the NFC North. I was told that with Aaron Rodgers as the quarterback, the rest of the North was irrelevant. At least we scored four more points than last year's season opener. He finds himself humorous. But this entire hour will have nothing to do with Aaron Rodgers. That was it. We're done with Aaron Rodgers. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I will say this, though. Come Saturday, next weekend, I will be in Green Bay. I'll be in Wisconsin, the Appleton area first, spending Saturday with family. First time I've been back in Wisconsin since we lost Grammy Helen. And actually the first time in my entire life that I've ever been to Wisconsin without Grammy Helen. It's going to be different for sure. But on Sunday, I'll be in Green Bay where I'll be hosting our show for Sunday night and Monday night of next week. And I'm also going to be at the Bears-Packers game at Lambeau Field on Sunday night. So that'll be interesting to see how the Packers respond to what was an anemic performance offensively in their first game. It's not unfamiliar, I suppose, but they're searching for a bit of a new identity as well with all the changes for them, specifically in their receiving core. And he made the point that they need to get Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon more touches, which is absolutely the case. So I wouldn't expect them to get crushed by the Bears, but what do I know? I said it just before the top of the hour. I've said it multiple times on this show. In light of what happened on Monday Night Football in Seattle, when we make predictions, the NFL laughs in our face. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio on this Tuesday morning now. We are in the shadow of week number one. It's done. It's gone, but it's certainly not buried. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need cash out of your home and a simple way to get it, Rocket can. I made this point on my CBS Sports Minute. Nathaniel Hackett's not new to the offensive side of the ball in the NFL, nor is Russell Wilson. Neither one of them called a timeout until it was really too little too late. 20 seconds left on the clock. They had three timeouts in the final minute against Seattle. They were trailing by a point. They looked disorganized. It was a mess really from start to finish when you consider penalties and the fact that they were so bad in the red zone. And then the clock management or lack thereof at the end of the game. But in the CBS Sports Minute that I just recorded a little while ago that some of you will hear soon enough, I capped it with, hey, when you're an offensive coordinator, you don't have to face the music. Now that you're a head coach, you're the one that has to pull on your big boy pants and go to the podium and answer all the questions. There's no hiding when you're the head coach. And that's why head coaches make so much more money than coordinators do, because they are the ones who have to deal with the media, and they're the ones that generally get all the responsibility. The buck stops with them. And that's a new and relatively unfamiliar position for Hackett. And boy, are there plenty of questions after what happened last night in Seattle. We can start at the beginning, though, for those of you who are waking up early on this Tuesday morning. Maybe you didn't watch or didn't see it. maybe you didn't hear the fact that Russell Wilson got booed. And I did see reports on social media. I don't know that it's true or not because I didn't see it myself. But there were reports that fans were throwing things at him as he came out of the tunnel with the Denver Broncos. But yes, a lot of booing. I was stunned by that. I have no idea how Seattle Seahawks fans, especially over the last 10 years, who enjoyed being relevant, being division champions, being NFC champions twice, and winning a Super Bowl, how you boo your Pro Bowl quarterback who gave you 10 years of his life and some of the best years of his career. But that's just me. The fans were riled up. It was raucous. It was the 12th man. So don't tell the Seahawks or their fans they're supposed to stink and finish dead last in the NFC West. Because they're not having it. They think you're full of it when you say that. And they put their best foot forward. Immediately in that first half, we got to see that they were ready to play and this was not going to be a walkover.
It's third down and two. Seattle game opening drive at the Denver 38. There's the Beldai snap, dropping back three, running back, block now, getting away from traffic as Smith throws. It's caught by Disley 20, open to the 10, running on the numbers of five, into the end zone. Touchdown, Seattle. 38-yard touchdown pass, and the evasive quarterback, Geno Smith, was hit. He escaped, he was slippery, and he threw to his open tight end. Disley got it, and he's in for six for Seattle. Second down, six, Denver 25. The Seattle quarterback gets the shotgun snap, throws a pass, over the shoulder, catch, goal line, touchdown! Tight end, Colby Parkinson, beating two defenders. Geno Smith has thrown his second touchdown pass tonight for Seattle. A 25-yard strike, and the Seahawks go up 16-10 just before halftime.
He was slippery, the great Kevin Harlan, on Westwood One. Who, yeah, along with Kurt Warner, were kind of amazed. I think everybody was watching the way that this Seahawks offense performed in the first half. You could point to the Denver defense. You could say that Nathaniel Hackett didn't use a lot of his starters during the preseason. All of that might be true. But there may also be some truth to the fact that Pete Carroll and the Seahawks really wanted to win this game. And Geno Smith is a veteran QB himself. He had time in the Seahawks system. And Pete Carroll told us all of the preseason and training camp that it was Geno's job, that Geno had beaten Drew Locke, and that Geno earned that starting nod. His first season opener in which he started since 2014. In the first half, he completes passes to eight different teammates. So eight different Seahawks had receptions, plus Rashad Penny was already over 50 yards rushing. Geno himself only misfired on one ball, 17 of 18 for 164 yards and those touchdowns that you heard. Now, Russell Wilson did connect on one long pass with Jerry Jeudy, and so the Broncos got on the board with that one touchdown. But already at the break, Denver had seven penalties for 71 yards, and that would continue. That lack of discipline, really they were an undisciplined mess, that would continue through the second half, as would the red zone woes for the Broncos. Third quarter, their opening drive, they fumble on their fifth snap inside the 11. Five snaps inside the 11-yard line. Not only do they not punch it in, but Melvin Gordon from shotgun, you're in shotgun on the one-yard line. Forget the one-yard line then. You might as well call it a first and goal at the five. Anyway, they're on the one-yard line. They line up in shotgun. And as Gordon takes the handoff from Russell Wilson, he fumbles. He gets hit and he fumbles. That's the opening drive of the third quarter. Later in the third quarter, Denver's on the one-yard line again. Also, once again, in the shotgun formation.
Third and goal. Inside the one, Wilson looks over the defense, gets the snap, hands off, Williams runs into his own blocker, fumbled the ball, rolls into the end zone, recovered by Seattle in the end zone. Can you believe it?
Was that friendly fire? Runs into his own guy. At least Melvin Gordon got hit by a Seahawk. He runs into his own guy and drops the football. Crazy stuff. from the category of you can't make this stuff up. So it's still 17-13 after three quarters. It's worth noting that the Seahawks did not score in the second half. On the first drive of the fourth quarter, yet another red zone opportunity. Seven snaps inside the 16-yard line, I think it was. Four incomplete passes and a false start. So at least they didn't fumble the ball, but four incomplete passes and a false start inside the red zone. So they settled for a field goal. It wasn't a 64-yarder. 17-16, that is the score. And after a three and out by Seattle, Denver gets the ball back. And this is what everybody showed up for, right? Russell Wilson. How many times has he led late game comebacks? How many times has the ball been in Russ's hands and he's been directing the Seahawks? Dramatic finishes. He's good at that. He's been good at that. He's got a flair for the dramatic. It's all built to this final Denver possession. As I was listening to Kevin Harlan and Kurt Warner, Kurt is geeked up about it. Denver gets the ball back with 4 minutes to go. And they don't get a whole lot of yardage. They move to the Denver 45. It's a third and 14. Javonte Williams picks up nine, which puts them little over midfield with a fourth and five. And as they seemingly are trying to plot their next move, the clock keeps ticking and ticking and ticking and ticking. If you were watching the Monday Night Mannings, Peyton about came out of his skin because he couldn't believe they didn't call a timeout. He was speechless. Eli Manning kept saying, oh, they're going to call a timeout. They're going to call a timeout. Oh, they're not going to call a timeout. Now they call a timeout. The clock gets all the way down to 20 seconds. 41 seconds tick off the clock before they use their first timeout. And you know what they use the timeout for? To set up a 64-yard field goal. Brandon McManus, who's got a strong leg, had never made a field goal longer than 62. 64 is asking a lot of anybody, even, say, Cade York. It would have been the second longest field goal in NFL history. He misses on his initial attempt, which didn't count because Seattle calls a timeout. And yet still, instead of having your $258 million quarterback with the ball in his hands, fourth and five, 20 seconds to go, you pick up a first down, you get closer. It's not a 64-yard kick. Nah, why don't we go ahead and kick the field goal?
64-yard field goal for McManus will be the try. And 20 seconds remain. It's fourth and five at the 45 of the Seahawks for Denver, trailing by one.
And maybe this is the right call, but this is anticlimactic. Like, I want Russell Wilson out there on fourth down to either make it or miss it to determine who wins this football game. McManus has a huge leg, and maybe you just say, hey, the odds are more in our favor to get this kick, but holy cow.
His career long is 61. There is no wind on a 66-degree night. A 64-yard field goal tried by Denver to take the lead. Ball put down. Right-footed kick is away, and it is no good. Wide left. And the sideline erupts for Seattle. 15 seconds to go. They'll take over. The ball and the kick had the distance.
I wasn't speechless earlier. I was just told not to speak. Right now, I'm speechless. I can't believe they took the ball out of Russell Wilson's hands to kick a 64-yard field goal to try to win this game.
And he wasn't the only one. Even though Russell Wilson backed his head coach, Pete Carroll, were you surprised by the decision to go for a 64-yard field goal instead of give the ball to a quarterback that you know oh so well?
They could have won it. It wasn't that far off. He kicked it far enough, didn't he? It was far enough to go. Yeah, and I was surprised. I wasn't thinking that. We were all planned up and ready to win a game on fourth down.
They were ready for fourth and five. Is it possible, I'm going to assume that it is actually true, that Pete Carroll has more faith in Russell Wilson than Nathaniel Hackett does? Or is it possible that Pete Carroll knows more about Russell Wilson than Nathaniel Hackett does? Oh my gosh. And then I will give Russ credit for towing the company line. But come on, man. You are a quarterback who believes in yourself and your skills. You tell us that all the time. And yet you think it was the right idea to go for a field goal from 64 yards instead of let you try on fourth and five?
We said, you know, where can you make it from tonight? And he said 46 left hash. I think we were on the 46, right? 46 left hash. That was before the drive. And we got it. We got it there. Unfortunately, it didn't go in. I think he has a leg for it, for sure. You know, just went a little left. I believe in Coach Hack. I believe in what we were doing, you know, and believe in everything. You know, anytime you can try to find a way to make a play on fourth and five, that's great too. But also, I don't think it was the wrong decision. You know, I think he can make it. Obviously, in hindsight, you know, we didn't make it. But if we were in that situation again, I wouldn't doubt whatever he decided.
You wouldn't? I would. Also, did anybody from the Broncos watch how bad the kicking was in week number one? Anybody? I don't know if that matters at all, but there were some abysmal kicking performances. I mean, rough. There were games that hung in the balance on kicks. There were games that were lost in the end because kicks were not made or blocked or yada, yada, yada. It was a roller coaster ride for special teams in week number one. And yet somehow, even after he missed on the initial attempt, Nathaniel Hackett thought that was better than his quarterback. I don't know. If I'm Russell Wilson, I might get offended. What did Nathaniel Hackett have to say about the kick instead of the fourth and five and about the 30-plus seconds that came off the clock before they used their first timeout? What do you think they were saving them for? Timeout in the postgame locker room for people to get a snack? Timeout to let Russell Wilson walk off the field so he could get booed again by the crowd?
Give him the send-off.
Good thing maybe he doesn't know as a first-time head coach that you don't get to carry those over to week number two. Maybe that's what
learning.
He thinks. He's learning on the job. He's
learning on the job.
All right. You'll hear from Nathaniel Hackett, the man on the hot seat. Welcome to the NFL, Coach. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Here we go from 64 to try to take the lead. With 20 seconds left, McManus off the left hash. This thing is going to be no good. It could have been long enough, but it was just to the left of the upright. And the Seahawks are going to win their opener.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
We heard what Russell Wilson had to say about going for a 64-yard field goal instead of allowing him and the Broncos office to stay on the field to convert a fourth and five or at least try. Now, I certainly understand that they were brutal in close and late situations, or actually up just short goal line situations. They were really bad. We talked about their red zone woes. So I understand if Hackett wanted to tell us that he didn't think his offense could get 5 yards. Okay, maybe there's that. Russell Wilson, though, said he would trust Nathaniel Hackett. Well, Coach, welcome to the podium. Why allow your kicker to go for a 64-yard boot instead of allowing the offense to try a fourth and five?
Hey, Brandon gave it his best shot. I mean, that's a long field goal to hit. I think he's completely capable of that, but obviously I wish we would have gotten a lot closer, but it put us in that weird spot there because we were in the field goal range, but we were on that fourth down situation. Didn't think we were going to get that many yards, so I thought it was a great job by Javonte, and we just made the decision. We want to take our shot there on that one.
Javonte Williams got them 9 yards on the third down. Remember, it was 3rd and 14. He got them 9 yards. So then it almost sounds like Hackett was unsure. They were in no man's land then. And so instead of going for it on fourth down, because you're obviously in four down territory in the final minute, then he thinks, oh, well, maybe we can make this kick. Ultimately, though, he didn't trust his offense. And also, by the time they let all that, what was it, 30 seconds tick off the clock? They didn't really have as much time as maybe they needed. You probably had 20 seconds left. Let's say you run a fourth down play, usually a run play, but fourth and five is a little longer than quarterback sneak situation. Tom Brady would totally try it. But let's just say you run a play, 7-8 seconds. Then you're down to, 12, 13 seconds? You have time for maybe one more play before you, but they also had two more timeouts though. That's the crazy part. They could have stopped the clock after two more snaps and would have had an opportunity to set up their field goal team. The whole thing was a mess, and it really was a lot messier because after they got those 9 yards on third down, it sounded like Nathaniel Hackett was surprised, didn't expect that, and then was kind of unprepared for what to do next. And so they all kind of stand around. They look at each other. I got to say, I think this is on Russell Wilson, too. Russ is a veteran quarterback. You're number 11. We see quarterbacks call timeouts all the time. And they had three of them. We see Aaron Rodgers do it. Peyton Manning's done it. Tom Brady. Quarterbacks call timeout all the time when they're not ready at the line or when they don't like what they see at the line. And so this is also on Russ. But, Coach Hackett, why no timeout after the third down play?
We have no excuses. You know, that's what we preach. We got to be sure that we, you know, get the play in and get it called and get those guys rolling. I know it was definitely loud, but again, that's no excuse. We got to be better.
Peyton Manning, obviously a Super Bowl winning quarterback in Denver during his time there, and Eli Manning were part of the Monday Night Mannings, and Shannon Sharp, the Hall of Fame tight end, happened to be with them during the fourth quarter. And their reaction as the time is ticking off the clock is priceless.
We got three timeouts, E. I might use one right here, E. Let's use one. No. Let's talk about this one. They're going to try to draw them off sides. Might try to draw them off sides, E.
You don't have that much time.
Snap count.
You don't want to waste that much time, I don't think.
Yeah, I think we should call timeout, like, now.
Now?
Well, they're running a play. They look unsettled. Sutton doesn't know what he's doing. Hurry up. Timeout.
What the? So you just burned 30 seconds to call a timeout?
You hear Shannon Sharp say, so you just burned 30 seconds. And called a timeout anyway? That's what you did?
So you just burned 30 seconds to call a timeout?
Yeah, you just wasted 30 seconds. Nathaniel Hackett certainly has a learning curve as a first-time head coach, but come on, man. You've been on the offensive side of the ball in the league for years, and your father was a coach too, so I don't know if there's an excuse there. First-time head coach. It wasn't just that. They were brutal in the red zone. Denver had a dozen penalties for 106 yards. This really was undisciplined, and they were unprepared. And that final minute just underscores that. By the way, as Shannon Sharp and Eli are talking through as the seconds are ticking off the clock and they're talking back and forth, if you haven't seen it, the video is there on Twitter. It's easy to find. Peyton has got both of his hands pressed to either side of his head, and he's just looking incredulous at the fact that all this time is going off the clock. He's actually speechless. Peyton Manning is speechless, and he's waiting for them to call a timeout, and it doesn't happen until it's obviously far too late. The look on his face, he does not have a poker face. It is fantastic. unless, of course, you're a Broncos fan, and then it's not so fantastic. But his face said it all. It really did.
Hey, guys, check it out. Just made my first TikTok.
Oh, we better check his TikTok and see whether or not he's got some choice reaction to the way the Broncos botched the final minute or so. And, of course, the time in the red zone plus the penalties. Really quickly, before we get to our update, in case you don't remember, when Russell Wilson was traded from Seattle to Denver, there were multiple players that went to the Pacific Northwest. Drew Lock, one of those, as a quarterback. Noah Fant, the tight end, who was featured in last night's game. And Shelby Harris, a defensive lineman who was a starter for the Broncos and got sent to Seattle in this deal. James Palmer of NFL Network caught up with a very animated Shelby on the field following the Seahawks win.
Shelby, you were part of this trade, and I know all the talk in this heading into this game was about Russell Wilson and about him coming back. But you heard the Geno Smith chants. You heard what was going on in this building. What kind of statement is this for this team?
It's a 1-0 statement. You know what I mean? We come out here, everybody doubted us. Everyone made this about Russ. You feel me? We made this about the Seattle Seahawks. Come out here, you know, play good ball for four quarters, come out with the W. Nobody expected us to win except us. It's always going to be us.
The defensive line made a statement in the red zone. Talk about the statement you guys made causing multiple fumbles inside the five.
Well, that's what happens when you trade one of your D linemen to the other team. We sit here and make plays, all of us. And that's what happens when you get two goal line stops. Right there, a win. Can't draw it up any better than that, man.
Last one is a negative, though. Jamal Adams going down for you guys as a defense. How big of a loss is that for you guys?
It's a huge loss, and we're going to do this for him. You know, he was a very integral part of our defense. And, you know, we had to go out there and grind and get this done for him. You know, we'll figure out other stuff out later. But, you know, we're going to join this 1-0 today. You know, we got to come around and play San Fran on a short week. But, hey, this is football, baby.
Last one I have for you. I was standing on the sideline watching you go absolutely insane. How much did this mean to you personally?
All I have to say is, let's ride.
Okay. So let's ride, of course, is Russell Wilson's thing.
Let's ride.
Even his own teammates make fun of all the different promo videos he did recording. Let's ride. Broncos Nation, let's ride. And so, it's just what happens when when you return to your former team, your former stadium, and not only are the fans booing you, but there's a bunch of players there that are just tired of hearing about your glorious return and how it's going to go so horribly wrong for them. So that interview with Shelby Harris, James Palmer of NFL Network, just a minute and 20, but boy, did he pack a lot into it. And he asked about Jamal Adams. He was carted off in the second quarter, and according to Pete Carroll after the game, he's got a serious quad injury. So we'll wait to hear about that, more about that coming up on Wednesday, because today's Tuesday. Can you believe it? Today's already Tuesday. Up and at them, peeps. Up and at them. Now, we still got your candidates for TD of the week. We've got our defensive player of the week, and we'll give you the latest on at least the serious injuries that we were kind of waiting for the prognoses to come on Monday. Yeah, there's always the downside of a great football weekend. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. It's a Touchdown Tuesday on After Hours.
Firing for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Takes it himself to the pylon. Touchdown!
One man to beat 10. He's gone.
They throw in the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Made a guy miss. He's inside the five. He's to the 3-2-1. Touchdown! Center zoning into the end zone. Touchdown!
To cast your vote for the TD of the week, head to @AfterHoursCBS on Twitter or give us a call at 855-212-4227. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Brady will go under center, first and goal from the five, ball resting in between the hash marks. Here's the snap. Brady back, lobs it left corner for Mike Evans. Oh, one-handed wow. Grab! Mike Evans makes the catch. Touchdown, Tampa Bay! Tom Brady puts it in the air, and Mike Evans reaching up, snatches it down with one hand. The Buccaneers add to their lead.
The Minnesota Vikings.
Play action, Kirk back to pass. He'll throw right. Look at that! Jefferson uncovered, 20, 15, 10. Dances to the right to the five.
and JJ is killing them again.
The New Orleans Saints.
First and goal for the Saints. Snap to Winston, throws to the end zone, and that is going to be a touchdown. Left side. Welcome back, number 13, Mike Thomas. His first touchdown since 2019.
The Chicago Bears.
Stunt picked up it. Up front. Eric Armstead being shoved out of the way, circling out of it, pivoting to set up a throw. Wide open near side. Pass is caught. There's Pettis to the 20, to the 15, to the 10, to the end zone! Wow! Justin Fields to a wide open Dante Pettis.
Wow, there are some great candidates, and it's really hard to narrow it down to four. But for the purposes of Twitter and Twitter poll and efficiency, we selected four TDs from the very first week of the NFL season. You hear Ryan Radke and Mike Golic on Westwood One Sunday Night Football. Tom Brady to a one-handed, well, it's a one-handed grab. He's got a second hand. But Mike Evans with a flair for the dramatic and a one-handed twisting grab in the end zone. Paul Allen on Vikings radio. Justin Jefferson torching the Green Bay Packers. Saints radio, welcome back to Mike Thomas. First game since the late stages, actually week 14 of 2020. And then Jeff Joniak on Bears radio. This might be my favorite play, one of my favorite plays of the entire weekend. Justin Fields eluding pressure, keeping his head up, going cross body and cross field to Dante Pettis, who is all alone as the Bears score 19 unanswered points to rally past the San Francisco 49ers. You can vote on Twitter, A-Law Radio, or on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS. The poll is pinned to the shop. I can't help it. This is what happens on a Tuesday morning in football season. It's pinned to the top of our show Twitter. Or it's on our Facebook page, and we always take your write-in votes. In fact, I've seen a write-in vote for one of the most dynamic defensive plays of week one.
Shotgun this time with a protector for Burrow. Wide side to his right. He gets the snap. He wants to throw it. Late rush. He throws it down the field. Intercepted at the 30. 25-20. Minka Fitzpatrick goes into the end zone for the Pittsburgh. Well, we got a marker down on the play, so hold on.
Oh, sweet Marie. What a play by Minka Fitzpatrick.
Minka was everywhere in this game against the Bengals, and for that, he is our Defensive Player of the Week, sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces, DOD, veterans, and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. On the first pass of the game from Joe Burrow, Minka Fitzpatrick picks it off and takes it back for a touchdown. So he has a pick six to go along with 14 tackles, and he's the one who blocked the point after attempt by Evan McPherson with no time left on the clock in regulation. If not for his block, the Bengals come all the way back and win this game because it was a chip shot. It was a PAT, and Evan McPherson certainly has that on his resume and his repertoire. But because of that blocked PAT, the Steelers end up having multiple opportunities in overtime. So adventures and kicking all over the place. And yet still, for some reason, Nathaniel Hackett thought it was a good idea to trot out his kicker for a 64-yard attempt. Huh. No place to go but up, apparently, for those teams that made dubious decisions and poor clock management and did not win on kicks. You can vote, again, for TD of the Week on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on our Facebook page. And we actually have a new feature we're going to introduce coming up this week before we get to week two and kick off week two, because we don't feel like it's fair to only highlight the exploits of the offenses because, you know, defense wins championships at all. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. We knew that the news about Dak Prescott would lead to surgery. So the fractured thumb, he had the surgery on Monday, and the timeline right now is 6 to 8 weeks before he can return. He told us on Sunday night he couldn't grip the football. He told us that he wasn't able to throw it, obviously, because he couldn't get a handle on it. And we've heard about these injuries before. In fact, Russell Wilson dealt with this last year and came back way too quickly. It wasn't his thumb, though, was it, Producer Jay? It was his middle finger?
I believe it was his middle finger, the tip of the top tip of his middle finger.
Right, but he couldn't grip the football, and it was pretty evident because his accuracy was gone for the few weeks after he first got back. Mike McCarthy had to, of course, talk about it with his team, get his team try to point in the right direction as they face now a month and a half, maybe 2 months without Dak.
Stick to the journey. I mean, our theme this year is resilience. We knew that we were going to have challenges. You can't get to where you want to go without them. And we got a bunch in week one. So, you know, we're just charging forward. I mean, I really like the energy and the communication and the meetings today with the players. So the only thing they ask me is just keep believing in us. And I do believe in them. You know, I love our locker room. I think we got the definitely got the right people. We need to be better than we were yesterday. We recognize that. So I can tell you their work ethic is extremely high. The belief and understanding is very high. We need to perform better. I got to perform better. So that's where we are.
We spent a good portion of our Sunday night into Monday morning show fielding your overreactions. Let me just tell you, 75% of them had to do with the Dallas Cowboys. OMG. The people who, of course, are Cowboys fans who are, whether or not they're believers in Dak, are devastated because you're talking 8 weeks here where you don't have your starting quarterback and your offense is already searching for a new identity. The offensive line's in transition. Your receiving core has CeeDee Lamb and a bunch of other guys. And so he needed to be the stabilizing force and the driving force for that offense until they could get comfortable and find an identity. But that's not going to happen. Now, I would say the positive is, and Mike McCarthy talks about resilience and how they're not going to panic. They're going to keep moving forward. It's likely that the NFC East will still be up for grabs. If we know anything about this division, you don't generally see a team run away with it unless it happens to be Dallas, right? So Dallas last year had a pretty healthy lead in the division. Even when they weren't playing well later in the year, they were managing to maintain that. The Eagles looked good in week number one. They've got pretty high expectations because of the moves they made in the offseason. But still, it's the NFC East. And it's the soap opera of the NFL. And usually there aren't major separations until, well, if at all, but until much later in the season. And even then, it seems like this division is always, because of the rivalries and because you don't have, at least right now, you don't have a team that is expected to be a Super Bowl contender or is an odds-on favorite, even when he gets back. I mean, it might be early November. Still, there's a long way to go after that. Half the season remains. I hate it for Dak. It sucks for Dak, personally. For all those people piling on the Dallas Cowboys, it's easy to do right now. Kick them when they're down. But this division is likely to still be up for grabs and up for the taking come mid-November even. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Now, it's a different story for the AFC North, right? These teams are going to batter and bruise one another. But how long can the Steelers go without the defensive player of the year in TJ Watt? Without him, everything looks different. Everything. Opponents can't afford to put one guy across the line from him, to block him with one guy. Sometimes it's two or three even, which frees other guys up. Offenses are scheming for TJ Watt. He's a load, and he's powerful, and he's fast. He's a leaper. And he is looking for a second and third opinion on his torn pec muscle. Hoping, I'm sure, to avoid surgery. Desperately hoping that he'll get a doctor to tell him that he doesn't need surgery. Now, regardless, he's not going to play for probably a couple months. We'll see. So it's the job of Malik Reed, who now morphs into an outside linebacker, to step up in place of TJ.
I'm ready for sure. Like I said, the past 3 years, that's been pretty much, you know, how I've gotten a lot of opportunity earlier on. So I'm definitely ready for it and ready to embrace it. I feel like being me, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I've been able to play the game at a high level when my number was called. And so I'm just looking to come in and be me. I feel like that's, you know, why I was brought here. So I'm just looking forward to it.
Malik didn't even join the Steelers until a couple days before the regular season kicked off, and now he's kind of thrust into the starting role. But he does have starting experience. He spent several years with the Broncos and started 34 times in Denver. Now, it's impossible to replace T.J. Watt. That's not happening. But it is going to be his job to make, well, to make the transition, but also to wreak as much havoc as he possibly can. Todd Bowles says the injury to Chris Godwin is not serious. They were fearing a serious hamstring injury for the Bucs receiver. Doesn't believe that that's going to be serious. And, before I move on from the Steelers, Najee Harris apparently just tweaked his foot and is expected to be on the field in week number two. San Francisco 49ers running back Elijah Mitchell is out for 2 months with a sprained MCL. And then there was one more injury. Oh, defensive end Derek Barnett tore his ACL for the Eagles. Whew. All right, we're back tonight. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Boom!